ever wondered about how or if you can improve egg quality? Well, you can. NIDA truly supports women whether you're trying to conceive, pregnant, postpartum, and beyond. For those trying to conceive, NIDA's egg quality support is designed to support egg cell health as they develop into mature eggs. Improving your egg quality can support fertility outcomes. I highly recommend women who are thinking about having another baby in the next year or so learn more about egg quality and check out NIDA's line of fertility supplements, including their egg quality duo at thisisnida.com. Get up to 40% off NIDA's plans with code VBAC. That is VBAC.
Good morning, women of strength. This is Julie here today with you. I am really, really excited today. We have Chelsea with us. She's from Victoria, Australia. And I'm really, really excited because she brought up a topic for the podcast that I am just like really, really excited about talking about. And what we're going to talk about today is the impact of birth choices and experiences on your identity and self-empowerment. So I can't wait to get more into that and talk more about how your birth choices and the experiences that you have throughout birth impact who you are and how you feel. I think that that's just an incredible thing that just isn't talked about enough. So before we do that, though, I am going to read a review of the week. And this one is from Apple Podcasts. And she says, what does she say? She says, I just wanted to drop a review and say thank you. Because of listening to some of your episodes, I felt empowered to talk to my OBGYN about skipping the repeat C-section in the event I go past my due date. This was something I had in my head that I wanted. And opting for an induction to still try for my VBAC. She was, and just all over is, so supportive of the idea and totally on board, which helped me to get more excited about championing this VBAC journey. So thank you. And I'm so excited about that. I think one of the most empowering things we can do, speaking of that, is to advocate for ourselves and be comfortable with talking to our providers about the things that we want for our own birth. So I'm grateful that this podcast helped empower you to do that, that you're able to hopefully have the birth experience that you wanted.
Hi, my name is Megan. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. I am a VBAC after 2 C-section mama, a wife, doula, and VBAC educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own, and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBAC, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional.
All right, back at it. Here we go. We are here with Chelsea. I cannot wait to hear more about her birth experiences. Now, Chelsea is a teacher, a podcaster, and most importantly, a mother. She's based in Central Victoria, Australia. She lives with her partner and 2 young daughters who inspire much of her work and perspective. I also want to hear more about your podcast and what it is about. So you have to let us know at the end how we can find you. In her free time, she loves exploring nature with her family, cooking up a storm, and savoring quiet moments with a good book or movie. That sounds like my type of girl. I'll tell you what. All right, Chelsea, I'm excited for you to get to your story so you can go ahead and just start sharing.
Yay. Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's such an honor to be here. I've been listening to the podcast for such a long time since after my first C-section, I found it pretty much straight away and just started listening to VBAC stories. So amazing. It's so lovely to be here. Yeah. So I'll start with my first birth, the reason I got to my beautiful VBAC. So in my first pregnancy, I had gone quote unquote post dates. And at the hospital, there was like a big talk around induction at a certain date. And I was in the midwifery group practice program there, which was really important to me to have continuity of care. So it was beautiful that I got in. We also had a private midwife that was supporting us because I was just desperate for that continuity And so they ended up helping us in at home in labor. I did have, as the induction date was looming, I had some stretch and sweeps in the weeks before it. And then one the night before my induction brought the labor on that morning. So I think it was, I was 41 and four when I went into labor, and they'd been wanting to induce me because I had low fluid around the baby and check they'd done. And anyway, we went into spontaneous labor at home, labored there for about 36 hours. I had a posterior baby and labor, so it was long. It was painful. I had that back labor. Anyone who's had a posterior labor will know it's just on from the get-go, and there just like wasn't much relief from it. So that was really hard. It was, yeah, I think in hindsight, I did look into things. I did a birth course, but I just was a little bit naive, I guess, to the realities of labor. And maybe that just comes with the lived experience of actually having it. Like, you have no idea what labor is actually going to feel like. But yeah, so labored 36 hours before our midwives at home suggested I go to hospital, and they'd said, you know, maybe it would be good, like you've been laboring for a long time, maybe it would be good for you to get an epidural, and that might kind of help relax you a little bit. And I went in to the hospital. Our group practice midwife was there, and I labored, I think, for another 10 hours or something there before she broke my waters. And then I ended up having an epidural and the Pitocin drip, which I think is the same here in Australia. Is that the same name? Pitocin? Syntocin.
Yeah, there. Pitocin.
Yeah, Pitocin. Yeah. Yes, so had that, and it essentially was just a cascade of interventions. In the end, my labor was then, yeah, augmented, obviously. And it was, I think, 45 hours in total before I had the C-section, and I was just so exhausted. And yeah, I guess it in a lot of ways felt like I gave up on reflection, which I have a lot of love for myself now. And I feel like it, you know, it was just such a big thing to be happening that, yeah, I try and have love and acceptance for myself in that moment. But I really, yeah, felt sad about that for a long time. You know, the C-section itself was a fine experience. I was really, really nervous. I'm really queasy with blood and all those kind of things. Everyone in the theatre was really, really respectful and explained what was happening to me. But it was also clinical and not the birth that I'd imagined. I was just so exhausted from hours of labour and different drugs in my system. And I had the epidural shakes. I never thought that would happen to me. And I just, when I'd listen to birth stories, I just skipped the C-section ones because I thought, well, you know, I don't want a C-section, so I just won't have one. And yeah, I guess in the weeks after the birth, the days and weeks, it kind of, nothing felt like reality. I was excited and happy to have a baby and call our family and friends and introduce her, but in a lot of ways I felt hollow, and I was really sick and sore and I could barely walk. The hospital staff were lovely. We were there 3 days post-birth, but yeah, it was over. That was overall a nice experience, but my recovery was tough. And looking back on photos from the time, I just looked like such a ghost, and you know, that just something wasn't behind my eyes. And yeah, I guess the love with my baby took a while to grow as well. And I think I was just in a bit of a state of shock. But yeah, I knew straight away in the hospital that I wanted a VBAC, and I was Googling VBAC, yeah, from the hospital, and I found VBAC support page from here in Australia, and I found your beautiful podcast and another VBAC Stories podcast that I started listening to in the weeks after birth. And I think it's also looking back on that experience, I realize how hard that was on me now, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. Mm. I love all of that. I think love and acceptance, like learning to love and accept yourself and your outcome and everything like that, is just such a huge part of healing that we just don't talk about a lot.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Okay. And then, yeah, so I then, yeah, had this drive for VBAC, I guess. And so then went into our next pregnancy. When I found out I was pregnant again, I knew straight away that I wanted a VBAC. I'd made a list of VBAC notes in my phone on my notes app, and I had that, and I had planned to hopefully get into the group practice program at the hospital again. Yeah, then we were looking into getting into that. I got a referral from my GP to get back into the hospital, but little did I know he hadn't referred me properly to the group practice program. So I was just put into fragmented care. And then when we got there for the 16-week appointment, although I'd called ahead about how to get in, they just said you apply at this appointment. But then when we got there, they said the program was already full. And yeah, that just wouldn't be a way that we'd get into it, which was really upsetting because continuity of care again was so important to me to have that. So I was feeling really, really upset at that time because I guess I had this doubt in my head that I wasn't going to have this VBAC, that was going to be hard to get because I guess looking into stories and hearing things, I became, I guess, a little bit fearful of the hospital system with you know, all the policies and everything around VBAC, you know. And so I had, early in the pregnancy, I had looked a little bit into home birth and contacted a few midwives just to kind of, you know, touch base with people and see what our options were. And I also engaged a doula. That was one of the biggest things that we were going to do because last time we had a private midwife and the hospital midwife. So it was just like double that kind of care, whereas a doula gives you a different kind of care. It's like an emotional support, which, yeah, was amazing. And I'm so glad I had a doula this time. And I ended up finding a doula that had been working as a doula for 15 years and specialized in VBAC. She'd had a VBAC after two cesareans herself. So yeah, she was incredible. And she was really pro home birth and was kind of suggesting that I look into that. But because I was due in December, it was really hard to find anyone that was available. There was also the issue of some home birth midwives didn't do VBACs at home. So I was really struggling to find someone, and I had still thought I'd go to the hospital. But then when we found out that we didn't get into the group practice program, then I really strongly was looking into home birth and stories I'd been listening to, VBAC stories on podcasts. I was noticing that people who had home births tended to just sound so happy with their experience, and these kind of little fears that were in my mind were just broken down each time. And yeah, I guess, yeah, as I said, like it was in this journey of understanding my first birth that I became so angry at the hospital system. And I think I'd put this blame on myself for so long, and it felt kind of good to put the blame onto them, to put it onto someone else, you know, like it had been this blame on me that I hadn't been prepared enough, that I wasn't fit enough mentally and physically in that pregnancy, that I just had too much trauma that I didn't work through, and that didn't allow me to relax. It was, yeah, it's so sad to just like reflect on the negative thoughts that I had about myself. And yeah, that it kind of resulted in this fear about being in the hospital, especially under a fragmented model of care, which is where you see a different midwife every time. Yeah. And yeah, I think I still did have some fears going into the idea of a home birth, things people had told me or like assumptions friends might have had about it. But I kept kind of looking for signs, and everything did feel right as we were like getting into it. And I think, you know, since this whole journey, it was really important to have this feeling about the hospital, which I don't have now. It's completely changed again, but it was an important step, I guess, in my journey to kind of trying to put the blame somewhere else, and then realizing nobody's to blame here. It's just, you know, it's a cascade of events that
I love that.
Yeah. And I guess I also felt, I'd listened to a story where someone said that even going to the hospital in itself is an intervention, and I didn't want any interventions in this labor. I had so many in the first, you know, especially I found vaginal exams really difficult in that first. I think it's just so hard when you're in this space with people who you don't know, who a lot of them you haven't met before. And I think, yeah, I often think about how mammals like go to a safe, quiet place to birth. And it feels like, yeah, it feels like that is so conducive to the feeling of safety in birth. So I was just really wanting like a quiet, kind of comfortable space for that. And yeah, so then we ended up finding a private midwife who had one space available. As I said before, those little signs that things were going well and going in our way. So yeah, that was like beautiful to have to have her and to have our doula, and everything was feeling really exciting with preparing for the birth. And I felt like I had a lot to work through. I had a lot of doubts, which is important to say, throughout my pregnancy. I didn't think that it was going to happen at times. I was really stressed about the baby's position because I'd had a posterior baby the first time. And I actually worked through a lot of my fears on posterior babies. I read Rachel Reid's book and read a lot of her blogs around OP babies and the idea that it shouldn't be pathologized. You know, it's just a variation of normal, and you can birth an OP baby, and it's a different process. And that's part of the acceptance for the first birth. You know, I didn't have the tools to know that at the time. I didn't know that movement's the most important thing for an OP baby, to turn them, as well as not breaking the waters too soon, because that kind of like cushions them to do that rotation in the labor. So yeah, knowing all of those different things was really helpful. And yeah, then I found your podcast a long time before, your beautiful podcast and other VBAC story podcasts. And I was just listening to an episode a day throughout my whole pregnancy of different stories, which I just found so useful. And I also
love that so much.
Yeah. And I also, on my own podcast, I had Megan on, actually, on my podcast. I did a VBAC series in my pregnancy, and she joined me to talk about weighing up the risk between a repeat C-section and a VBAC, which is an incredible episode. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. And yeah, that series like had so much of an impact, because people who had VBACs would reach out to me with words of support or were planning VBACs and just like loved the series. Mm-hmm. So I'm so grateful that Megan was able to talk to me. And I also spoke to Hazel Keedle. I'm not sure if you know her.
Yes, I sure do. I love her.
Yes. So yeah, I read her book, her beautiful birth after cesarean book, and she came on the podcast as well and shared her story and spoke about it. And just all of these like women who had VBACs themselves and could just like talk on the topic. It was so amazing to have them on the podcast. And that was going, you know, throughout my pregnancy. So that was like a nice little thing going on there too. Then I really researched this time. I think having that lived experience really helped anchor the research. And the first time I'd found it difficult to like connect to books or to read them through. I think I half read a lot of books, whereas this time I read heaps. I listened to audiobooks. I found that helpful with a busy toddler running around. Having like an audiobook I could listen to kind of helped there. And then I'd had my beautiful doula, private midwife. It was so nice just being able to have visits from home and not have to go into the hospital. I still had scans and everything. I organized some big, long phone calls with my doula. She'd recommended, just call me anytime and we can like talk through fears, the emotional side. She was really, really big on the emotional mental prep, which was amazing to have her. She was also a great support for my partner. I'm just all about doulas. Anyone who's considering one, please get a doula. It will change the trajectory of your birth, I really believe. And yeah, we had these really big conversations when I was really fearful about the baby being breech or posterior baby, or I felt like I kind of had to get to this stage of full acceptance that I might have a C-section again. And I just wasn't getting there, and that was really stressing me out. And my doula said to me, I think I was quite heavily pregnant, and I was just saying, I'm so stressed because I just feel like I'm never going to get to that stage. And she kind of said, you know, you don't actually have to get to that stage. You've done so much beautiful work in this pregnancy. You've got the best birth team. We're only going to be going to the hospital if you or your baby really needs it, and you're only going to be having a C-section if either of you really need it for whatever reason. And it's okay to also mourn that you don't want a C-section, and if it happens that you're going to be upset, and that's okay. And I feel like that was a great like breakthrough moment for me to be able to, I guess, feel like that I didn't have to get to this full acceptance stage of like, yes, I'm fine to have a C-section again.
I love that. I love that.
Yeah. So yeah, that was great. She was such a beautiful support. I made sure I walked every day. I did prenatal yoga, which was so nice to connect with other pregnant women. And I had a pregnancy exercise app that I tried to do every day as well. I always sat forward when I was in chairs or in the car and was just on a Fitball from the third trimester. I work online teaching, tutoring students. So I just sat on my Fitball when I was on that. So they couldn't even tell. I was just in the background. Would even at the dinner table was just always on my Fitball.
I love that. I think Megan said she didn't slouch once during her pregnancy. Or
yes. Yes. I remember that. Yeah. I was just so, Megan also had a posterior baby the first time. So I was, she and I were both determined to not have that posterior baby again. Even though I had worked through the fears there, I just felt that would have kind of been a bit of a trigger for me, I think, even if my midwife had done a palp and found that the baby was posterior. She actually said to me after I birthed, she'd said, even if the baby was posterior, I was thinking I just wouldn't tell you.
Good idea.
Yeah, she was great. She really empowered me a lot, which was a beautiful experience. And yeah, as I said, was worried about the baby being breech. So position was something that was so anxiety inducing for me, but I was just trying to relax with it as much as I could. I saw a pelvic floor osteopath and an acupuncturist who also gave me these Chinese herbs she said that would help with positioning, and whether it actually did or it was a placebo, I really think that worked. I would actually notice after I'd take the herbs that I would feel the position of my baby's kicks change in my tummy, which was really interesting. I loved seeing the acupuncturist in both my pregnancies, actually, which is so funny because I usually hate needles, but for some reason I could find it.
It's different though. Acupuncture is different than just getting jabbed by a needle or getting your blood drawn or whatever. I agree.
Yes, yes, yes. And both acupuncturists were just so beautiful and just held space for me so well. I had a counselor that I've been seeing for 5 years. And so I still saw her. We worked through mental hurdles, past trauma. And I really think coming back to kind of the theme of the episode around self-identity and development, I think working through this trauma in my pregnancy was such a pivotal moment in my life. And I'm still feeling the flow and effect of working through that today. And it really started in that pregnancy in such a positive way. And again, I had this feeling at some point that I had to fully work through all the trauma or something to, be able to have a VBAC or, feel great about my birth. But I also came to a conclusion through talking to my doula as well that you don't need to have worked through it all. It's amazing that I am kind of confronting things, but, you don't need to get to some, enlightenment stage or something with it, that it's completely all resolved. And she'd spoken about how her midwife in her pregnancy had told her the same, that you don't need to work through it all. And she kind of said, if in your labor you feel like there's still going to be some of that trauma there, I want you to put it into a box, metaphorically put it into a little container and have it at the door and then give it to me as I enter. So I just know that you're putting it to the side there, and that I know that you're still kind of, it's come up a bit in labor or something like that, which I just thought that was such a beautiful thing. And my doula said that I could do the same with her if I needed. And so, that was really helpful working through that. So many things I did. I had this feeling that I had to leave no stone unturned to feel like I'd done every possible thing to hopefully have my VBAC. I also tried to sleep on my left side each night, which I know is recommended with my diet. I became very protein obsessed because I heard that would really help with labor and softening and everything. I ate dates every day. I also, I had protein in every meal, and I would also have a smoothie every day that I would put cashews and egg in, which was suggested by someone I actually had on the podcast, not VBAC related. She just came on for a guest episode. She created an app called Natural Birth by Eco. It's just this little app. It's really cost effective, and it's all about different ways to prepare for birth, which I really loved having that. And she had these little smoothie recipes in there. She had different homeopathics you could try, movement in labor. I loved that little app. If anyone's looking for anything.
Yeah, what is it called again?
Natural Birth by Eco, and Eco is spelt E-double-C-O.
Cool. Awesome. Yeah. Making a note of that for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I think she's in America as well, actually. And yeah, took prenatal vitamins. I took iron supplements, daily meditations and visualizations I had saved. I'd listen to every night or if taking a nap. I had a baby blessing with my friends, a mother blessing. And I got my friends to write me some birth affirmations. I wrote some for myself. My favorite that I practice in pregnancy when I was doing a little workout and I was finding it too hard, I'd say like, I can do this. I am doing this. You know, if I was doing some squats and they were really burning, and that really came in labor as well. I kept thinking that too, like the feeling of like, I am doing this, you know, I'm doing this right now. I found that really useful. And also birth is powerful, but so am I. I loved that one. I also made an early labor plan. I made birth plans for if we transferred to hospital, if we had a repeat C-section, including a letter to the staff about, you know, how much of a significant moment this is for me, how I'd like to be treated and spoken to. I also had a list of things for my partner for what he could say to me during labor if I did certain things, so in crises of confidence. And our doula also used to run this birth course here in Melbourne, and she went through her birth course, which was great for my partner too. So things like the physiology of labor and birth, hormones of labor, early labor prep. And she had this great birth circuit as well, which was really useful in my labor. So there was just so many things, Julie, that I did during my labor.
I love that. I think that there's like, but it's not one size fits all, right? At VBAC prep, it's not one size fits all. There's lots of things. And I've said this before, like, pick the things that resonate with you and do those things. Mm-hmm. And if it's only one or two or three things, do those things. If it's all the things, do those things. It's just, there's so many, there's so much available to you and so many different types of personalities. It really is just so much available, and you don't have to do everything, but if you feel like you need to, or you want to, then definitely do as much as you can. Like, it's just really neat, all of the things that are available, even now, from I had my first VBAC 9.5 years ago. There's just so much more available to us, and I think it's really incredible.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. And there's so much more awareness around VBAC, which is amazing. And I think because I consumed everything, I consumed every story. And if a new person said something different that they tried, I was like, okay, I will do it too. And, you know, yeah, as you say, it's definitely not for everyone. And I in no way think that I had to do all of the things that I did in my pregnancy. But I think in a way it helped me to feel like that I had, you know, done a lot, and that question of
I'm a do all the things girl. Let me tell you what, like, things I did not do. I did not do perineal massage. Nope, that's definitely not for me. Okay, but pretty much everything else. Oh, or dates. I could not do the dates, but I did like everything else. And that's it. I think that in some ways, whether healthy or not, it kind of helped me feel like I had some kind of semblance of control, like control the things you can control, and and let the rest be guided however they need to be. And I'm very much do all the things person myself as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, love that. Yeah, and yeah, I just it honestly did really help to feel like I'd done all those things. And in hindsight, I don't know which the best things were, but all of it kind of like worked together to this beautiful crescendo of all of it coming in my labor and birth, which, yeah, it was great.
Hey mamas, we're going to take a quick moment to look a little deeper into egg quality. If I'm being super honest, it wasn't until I discovered Needed that I learned about ways to help our egg quality and that it was even important. Anyone with me? Well, I just want to give a shout out to Needed for bringing this information forward and understanding all that goes into having optimal health in fertility, birthing, and postpartum journeys. The Egg Quality Duo pairs two essential products, the Egg Quality Support and the COQ10 to support optimal egg quality. Together, they offer targeted, optimally dosed antioxidants to improve egg quality and support fertility outcomes. The egg quality is formulated by a perinatal health practitioners to help support you during your preconception period and conception. They're also nicely paired with Needed's complete plan. The VBAC link has a VIP code to get up to 40% off select plans. you can visit thisisneeded.com and type in VBAC, that is V-B-A-C, at checkout to get a special discount. They have fast shipping too, so you will be on your way to supporting your egg quality in no time. Let's take a moment to talk about Coterie wipes, because they're just as amazing as their diapers. These wipes are made from 100% plant-based fibers and are up to 30% larger than most other brands, making them perfect for even the messiest of situations. They're also hypoallergenic and dermatologist tested, so they're safe for newborns and even eczema-prone skin. One of our team members shared that these wipes have been a game changer, gentle enough for delicate skin, but durable enough to get the job done with fewer wipes. They've even earned the National Eczema Association Seal of Acceptance. You guys, you can pair these with Coterie diapers for a high-performance diaper duo. And do not forget, you can get 20% off with code VBAC20 of your first order of $40 or more. Add a pack of these incredible wipes to your order to see the difference.
Yeah, so, yeah, I went into spontaneous labor, which was exciting, at 41 weeks on the day, which I thought was a cute little one. My babies just like cooking a little bit longer, I think. They both were over the 41 weeks. And yeah, I was just trying to relax into those final weeks. I really was wanting to kind of be in my own little bubble. I ended up messaging friends and just saying, I'm not going to message you now until the baby comes, which I feel like really set me into a good mindset for oxytocin flowing and,
yeah,
you know, getting away from offline. And I was seeing so much online around Palestine and Gaza and all of those things that were happening in the world that were feeling so heavy. So I just needed to escape from, yeah, the heaviness of the online world. And then, yeah, so I woke up on, I'd gone.
Hey, everybody. I just wanted to take a quick sec to thank you all so much for listening to today's episode. We are so glad that you are here. This community is near and dear to our heart. We love you all so much. If you enjoyed today's episode, we would really appreciate it if you'd leave us a rating and review. Our whole team here at the VBAC Link actually gets to see these reviews come in, and it makes our day. A 5-star rating helps us share our podcast and gets these important messages out there. Thank you so much for listening, and we cannot wait to see you next time.
And had acupuncture on the Friday, so 39 and 6. And I think I was almost holding out to have a last acupuncture session because I loved my acupuncturist and I loved speaking to her, and we had a great conversation. And I said I felt like I was ready, and something felt like it shifted in that acupuncture session. She never did any induction acupuncture. She didn't believe in kind of doing that. She wanted my body to do everything as spontaneously as it could. But yeah, there was just something about when I was laying in that room, and I feel like I had my hands on my belly and I thought, I'm really ready for you, baby. And yeah, I felt this shift in myself. And I actually, yeah, when I was on the way home from that acupuncture, I thought, I've just got to get to the supermarket and get all this fresh fruit that we'd planned to have in labor, in our early labor plan. And I've just, for some reason, I just have to get everything ready in case. Yeah, I knew. And then, yeah, then I'd also had the nesting instinct when I got home, which I hadn't had the first time. And I was so excited about that. I started like furiously cleaning the toilets. I got some Dettol wipes and was, because I really wanted to spend a lot of time on the toilet, and I was cleaning that out. Mm-hmm. Which, another sign. And then I also, after I'd cleaned my toilet, then went to the toilet and had a bloody show just after the acupuncture. So yeah, then my midwife had come around and checked my pad to see it wasn't fluids or anything. And anyway, the next morning at about 3 a.m. I woke up with a contraction, and I was so excited, and it just felt so different straight away than the first one, my posterior labor, where the contractions came on so intensely from the get-go, and it's almost like you don't have a break between them because they reverberate all the way around your back. It's just, yeah, it felt like active labor, I guess, from the start. So I don't know how I made it 45 hours, really. And yeah, so this time woke up, I started timing them on my phone, and then kind of could drift back off to sleep. I think between 4 and 6, I mostly slept. They must have been pretty light. And then I woke up around 6. And they were on. They were about coming like 5 to 10 minutes apart, a little bit irregular. We got our toddler up. She came into bed and I remember we had this beautiful little conversation with her and we told her the baby was coming.
Aww. And
she was like, oh, yay. And it was very sweet. And we'd planned for her to go and stay with my mum for the labor. Like I had seen so many beautiful videos of kids being there at home births, but I just felt like I needed her cared for. And I guess I always had this idea in my head of, you know, but what if I need to transfer to hospital, even if I have a V back there, but you know, I just needed to know she was cared for, I think mentally. And so, yeah, we got up, we had some breakfast together, had some porridge, I think. And everything still felt really manageable, but was definitely coming. And I was timing them. I had a TENS machine, which also had a little timer on it. So I could time them on there and it saves them all in this little section. So you can look back on how far apart they are. I found this a great distraction. And then my partner drove our toddler around to my mum's and I made some spaghetti bolognese while he was gone that we then had when he came back. We had this massive early labor plan of like going for walks and watching a movie, and we darkened a room so everything was nice and conducive to oxytocin. And then I had a little birth comb, which I didn't use until later. I'll bring that up again then, which was also great. But I liked having my TENS. We watched Theatre Camp, this comedy movie. I'm not sure if you've seen it, but it was very funny. Recommend to anyone in labor or any kind of, even like a nostalgic movie or something funny is great. I wasn't really paying all that much attention, but my partner was laughing and that was giving me oxytocin that he was really enjoying it.
No, I watched the comedian Jim Gaffigan. I don't know if you've heard of him or not, but he has some funny shows, and I've watched that with more clients than I can even remember, to be honest. Definitely more than a few. Yes, I love that. Laughing definitely gets the oxytocin going. I love it.
Yeah. Yes. Yep. Amazing. And we had some like cuddles and he gave me some little shoulder massages and I was mostly just on my Fitball bouncing away as I did. I spent some time on the toilet and this would really ramp up my contractions. I really, really resonate with the dilation station and was obsessed. I was obsessed with that. And I had a massive bloody show, but like two times throughout my labor when I sat on the toilet, and it would really ramp up my contractions, which was great. I guess my partner and I were expecting it to be a really long labor again. And we didn't want to call our doula and midwife too quickly because we didn't want for people to just be waiting around. We wanted to do most of the labor ourselves. So we'd messaged a few times and our doula had said it still sounded like I was in early labor. So keep going with the early labor plan and maybe try and go for a walk or have a nap to have a rest if you can. And so after a movie, we decided to try and have a nap and then that we'd get up and go for a walk. Cause we thought that it was still going to be like ages longer. I think it had been about 10 hours at this stage. So we got into bed. My contractions were 5 minutes apart. I called my mum and my toddler just to check in. It was kind of like I just needed to hear that she was okay in my head. Yeah. And I did. Yeah, it still felt a little bit far apart at that point. But once I got off the phone, it was almost like something released in me and they started to come a little bit closer together. They were suddenly like 3 to 4 minutes apart. My partner suggested we could go for a walk and that we should do it soon before it starts to get dark. And I just suddenly had this feeling of like, a walk is not what I want. If my contractions are this close, how could I possibly be walking around?
How could I possibly walk?
Like, no, thank you. And I started getting a bit antsy and I said to my partner, I thought that we should start that birth circuit I mentioned earlier. So it's these birth stations. I think it was Rhea Dempsey. I'm not sure if you've heard of her. And she suggests like 8 different stations that you move between and you spend half an hour in each. But most of it is, it's recommended you do it in active labor to distract you then. And our doula had said that as well. Just do the early labor plan till then. But I just had this drive. I was like, I really just think that it's just getting too intense. I need to do this one now and start doing that. So I started with leaning over the couch, I think was the first station that we did. And after half an hour, I moved up onto the couch. It was still it was getting like more and more intense. And after about 10 or 15 minutes in the second position, it was just feeling like getting more and more intense. And I just said to my partner, this isn't working. I need something else. He suggested the shower for a little bit of relief. So I started to get up to go there, but then I just had the sudden urge to sit on the toilet again. And I think this might've been a crisis of confidence in my mind as, you know, I was just feeling like, I don't know how I'm going to go on. Like if I'm still in early labor, like, my gosh, like I can't keep doing this.
Well, that's called transition.
Yes. Yes. Which now I think that is what that was. And yeah. And I went and sat on the toilet and had a massive bloody show, even bigger than the last one. And we'd sent a photo to our midwife. And I think she'd called me when I was on the toilet, kind of saying, you know, I could come now. And we were like, no, no, we're fine. We're fine. We're still in early labor. We're fine. And so then my partner came in when I was on the toilet and the contractions were like almost coming back to back, like sometimes 2 minutes apart, sometimes just barely a break. And I just thought, I hopped in the shower and that wasn't really providing much relief. And in my last labor, when I'd got into our bath at home, that had really slowed things down because I was still in such early labor then. And so I said, I know that I'm not supposed to hop into the bath in early labor, but like, I just need a break from this. Like I need it to calm down a bit because this is just bloody intense. And our midwife told us in hindsight that she knew that I was in active labor when she could hear me on the phone that time. And she was really wanted to come, but we'd kind of been like, no, we're fine. And kind of like sent her away. So she'd just been sitting at home, just like twiddling her thumbs with her. She literally had her bag on her shoulder, like ready to go. And she was just waiting for our call, which didn't come for a couple of hours later because, yeah, I hopped into the bath and still was not providing the relief. And I was feeling this kind of like pelvic pressure, which I'd never felt before in my last labor. And mm-hmm. I was just doubting that it was going to happen. And I was just thinking like, you know, we're not actually going to have this baby back. I'm just going to have to go to hospital. And like, I guess I never had a fear of like that I'd need to have a repeat C-section. Like that never really, really crossed my mind. But yeah, I guess I just always had doubt that it was actually progressing. And
we talk ourselves out of it, don't we? Like I remember yes. conversations with myself when I was in labor like that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, totally. And yeah, and then we called out doula who heard me and kind of said, you know, how many of those back-to-back contractions have you been having? And I said, oh yeah, like quite a lot. And she was like, look, this is what's going to happen. I'm going to hop into the car right now and I'm going to call the midwife and we're going to be there as soon as we can. And my partner said to her, like, you know, oh, you know, we're fine. Like we're managing just fine here. Like it's all good. Like you don't have to come, like thinking again that we're still in early labor. And she's like, no, look, her contractions sound very intense. I think she's about to have the baby. Like, Hagen, start filling up the pool and we'll be there soon. We were like, oh, okay. And so he started filling up the birth pool and our midwife arrived first because she was 20 minutes away from us. She was 20 minutes from us and she came in and she was just, it was so beautiful to see her and just feel this, yeah, like what I never felt like I had in the last birth, which was just this team that just like wholly supported me. And I just, yeah, it was just such this beautiful moment. She came in when I was in the bath and just, she just held my hand. She didn't say anything. And that was just, yeah, it was a powerful moment that really stands out to me in my labor. The pool was ready pretty quickly, it felt like. It probably wasn't that quick, but I was just having these contractions and I could feel this pelvic pressure again. They helped me into the pool. Our doula arrived just after I came into the pool. And my partner said afterwards that both the doula and midwife had come in wearing the biggest smiles. And now we know it's because they knew how close I was to actually birthing.
Yes, they did.
Yes, they did. But me in my head, I'm like, oh, they're all just trying to make me feel better. They all know that I need to go to hospital and have another
C-section. No, even by my fourth baby, I was like, okay, fine, just come check me. You can tell everyone I'm just 4 centimeters and everyone can go home and come back in the morning. Yeah. By my fourth, yeah. this was my third. I was still like that. Okay. And then I had the baby 2 hours later. Like, it's fine. Yeah.
Okay. That makes me feel better. Yeah. Yes. But yeah, then I was, I think I was pushing pretty much straight away after getting into the pool. And this was in the evening, I think around 10 or 11 PM and had my birth playlist going. I'd taken my TENS machine off because that was no longer kind of helping me. And so I had the birth comb that I mentioned earlier, which you just hold in your hand and it kind of redirects the pain pathways.
Yeah.
The neural pathways or whatever. So that was really helpful. When I was in the pool, I could have that. It was all just like so intense, like so intense because I had had no interventions whatsoever. I'd had no vaginal exams. I'd had no pain relief at all. And I was doing breath work was really working for me. I'd practiced in my pregnancy, like breathing in for 4 and out for 6 to the best of your ability when you're contracting and running a marathon, metaphorically. I really worked on like loosening my jaw and shoulders in this time, but I also was definitely one of those people who kind of roared my baby out. I was not quiet. I was not just breathing serenely like you see in some beautiful videos. I was like mooing like a cow, like I just sounded a primal. And there was definitely times where it felt like I was pushing, but I think it was kind of a fetal ejection reflex that was coming on. And I really tried to think though of like, I was like loosening my shoulders, like even just dropping them down, like loosening my jaw between contractions. I'd have little sleeps on the edge of the birth pool. I was obviously in the water, which was amazing. And I didn't actually tear in this birth, which I've heard, can be attributed to water really helps with not tearing.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We had the dim lights that we'd prepared in advance. And then I had this chocolate coconut water, which was great. Someone had a bottle of water that they were giving me between each contraction, and we had essential oils on in a burner, and my doula had bought these amazing lights as well that were shining on the wall. So that was like beautiful in all the photos. Yeah. That's something I do really regret, is not getting a birth photographer. And our doula was actually a birth photographer as well. And I was umming and ahhing about it, I think because I had this kind of feeling that I'm not going to actually have a VBAC. And
you don't want to like jinx it.
I didn't want to jinx it. But now I really regret, like, our photos, they're all like a little bit blurry because it was so dark apart from that big light. But it would, and it would have made so much sense. She could have been our doula and our photographer. And are you a photographer?
Just a little plug in. Yes, I'm a birth photographer.
Yeah.
It's like, just get the photographer. Uh-huh. No, like you cannot take pictures that you cannot have pictures that you never took, but I've never heard somebody regret it. Like, figure out whatever you can. If you think you might want it, just do it. Just get the birth photographer, man.
Yes.
I'm telling you.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yes.
A little tangent there.
If you're listening and you've been considering, just do it. You will never regret it. Even if you have another C-section, like, it's, you still are going to have the most beautiful photos of your baby entering the world. So do it. And then just do it. And I remember feeling something pop in the water, and that was my waters breaking. Things got really intense from there. The feeling, I'll never forget the feeling of her head descending into like the birth canal. Like, that was wild and the most intense thing I've ever experienced. And I remember thinking in that moment, like, I am never giving birth vaginally again. This is the worst. And then like the next day I was like, actually I could do that again. But then she came through. She was born just before midnight. I just snuck her in on the day before. I was really determined for her to have that birthday. So she was born, I think, at 11:53.
Nice.
And I always will remember the moment that, I think the midwife had said, my doula had said, on the next contraction, you're going to feel her little body slip out and swim through the water, and then you can grab her and put her onto your chest. And my doula just knew the best things to say to me right when I needed to hear it every time in labor. Like, oh, doula as well. Anyone considering a doula, get a doula.
Yes. Get the doula.
Doula. Take the photos. And
And you deserve it. Like, your birth is so amazing. It's the biggest day of your life. Like, you deserve it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And they're doing God's work, I believe. And then, so then the next contraction came, and my midwife said, just reach down, Chelsea, grab your baby. So I was the first one to grab her between my legs. She kind of came and swam through the water, and she was so slippery and slimy from the water. And she just like was on my chest, and she cried straight away, and she was all purple and cute and just had this amazing head of hair. I remember when, before she'd been born, when her head was out, I remember they were saying time of hair, birth of hair or something.
Oh my gosh, that's
so like
funny.
Floating in the water.
Yeah. Normally they'd be like heads out, and they'd be like heads out.
Heads out. And then she was on my chest, and it was just, it was such an amazing feeling. I think I was in a lot of ways, I was in a state of shock. Like I didn't have this like euphoric feeling that I'd heard in experiences, but I was just, because the last bit had just been so intense. And I think my active labor in total, they were saying, was about 3 hours. So it was just an hour of active labor. Then I was just pushing. So that all happened really fast. And I think I was in a bit of shock there. But it was, I felt amazing, even though that happened. And we hopped out of the birth pool. I laid on our couch. They'd set up a nice little bed. It's like a sofa bed couch. We laid there together. She did a little breast crawl, which I didn't get to do last time, and we just had skin to skin. I birthed my placenta spontaneously as well. I think that took about an hour to happen, and that I just really did not want to have to do that kind of like feeling like you're going to poo feeling, that pushing feeling. And I wasn't connecting that, yes, I have to do that again. I have to actually birth this placenta. It's not just going to flop out. So I felt annoyed that I had to go through this birth again. But
a little more squishy and not quite as big.
Not quite as like cool on the other side. You don't get to hold your placenta, and I mean, you definitely could.
That is very true.
Yeah. And it was so nice being at home and being able to be tucked into our bed. I had a shower after birth, and I hadn't had a shower with my C-section for like 3 days or something, and it felt like such a big event, whereas this time I could stand straight away, which was incredible.
I love that. I loved my home birth. I had my 3 VBACs at home, and I think that, like, I don't know what it is, but there's just so much, I don't know what is power or safety or whatever, but like literally after I had my baby, I got out of the birth pool. I went and rinsed off in my own shower. I got into my own bed. We ordered pizza twice for my 2 babies that were born like in the late afternoon. We had just had pizza for dinner. It was just like cozy at home. My other kids were there. Yeah. It felt so much safer. It felt more conducive to my like need for that natural oxytocin flow and those types of things. Mm-hmm. Like I just absolutely loved it. Like every little thing about it was amazing. I absolutely love your stories. I have so many notes about things I want to talk about. We're running a little short on time, so I want to talk about one thing you had mentioned in your story about when your midwife did position checks for the baby and like you just don't know what's a trigger for you. I think a lot of us people that have had C-sections or an unwanted birth experience go through similar things. I know for me, it was every time I got my blood pressure checked, because I had preeclampsia, right? The first sign was blood pressure problems. And so like every time I got my blood pressure checked, my blood pressure would go up. I'm like, oh, it's so scary. And it was just the thing. And I feel like we probably all have something like that that's gonna cause us a little more stress and a little more anxiety than it would the first time. And so I remember one time I went to the grocery store and just randomly took my blood pressure and it was like really high. And I did not know that they don't keep those grocery store blood pressure things calibrated very well. And so I like called my midwife. I'm freaking out. I'm crying. I'm like, oh my gosh, I think I have preeclampsia. I don't get my feedback. I was like really stressed out. And she was like, well, why don't you first calm down? Because your blood pressure, you know, she didn't say it like that. That's the way I would talk to myself. And she's like, well, why don't you come in the office, you know, take some big drinks of water and we'll just see what's going on. And then I went in there and everything was fine, you know, but like, that was a little triggering for me even now, 11 years later. And I hate getting my blood, my heartbeat gets a little faster every time a blood pressure cuff's put on me. Isn't that strange? Yeah. Well, maybe not strange at all. Strange is not the right word, but like, it's a thing that I hold, that I would hold on to, and that would trigger those feelings, the emotions, right? For that come, because our birth experiences matter. They matter so much. And I want to just kind of go into your, how our birth choices and experiences impact our identity and how we feel about ourselves. Because the first, like literally the climactic event shove into motherhood is the baby exiting your body. And how we experience that has the potential to set the tone about how we feel as mothers, about how we feel as women, about how we feel as parents, even about just human beings in general. And if we're not careful, it can lead us into the spiral of self-loathing and hating and doubt and questioning whether we can even do this anyways, because being a mom is hard.
Yes.
It's very hard enough without being thrown into it with a traumatic experience. And so I really like how you processed through a lot of things after your, you know, I like how you said you went from your journey on hating yourself to hating the system to like finding a good balance of like, it's not necessarily anybody's fault. It's just circumstance. And I think we can all appreciate that as well. And I want to also kind of turn it back to how like your love and acceptance, the love and acceptance for yourself, because I feel like we also go through some sort of journey where we question our choices and our smartness, right? Like our ability to make good decisions and maybe even some self-hatred. And how did I not know this? How could I have not have been prepared? And those types of things, and learning to give yourself grace for not knowing the things you didn't know and not being prepared then as you are now, things like that, I think is another big journey that is important. And I also like how you said you didn't have to be prepared for everything or resolve everything or heal everything to get through to your next birth. But that journey, being on that journey, is really important part of being ready for whatever the next birth brings.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And yeah, I really felt like that my second pregnancy really like held a mirror up to myself on like things that I needed to work on. And it felt so hard to confront, but I'm so glad that I did. And I think, I feel so much sadness for how I looked at myself and my body for some time and felt like I'd failed or I was failing in that birth. And I really worked through that in the pregnancy, and now I have so much more acceptance for it and love for like what I didn't know at that time and all the things that I felt. And this birth experience has changed me so much in that I really have so much more of a deep love for my body this time. Like my body felt so foreign the last time, and I wasn't ready for, I didn't expect the change that would happen that inevitably comes after you have a baby as well. So that also came into it. Like my body didn't feel like mine. Whereas this time I feel so much more anchored in myself. I feel so much more in awe of my body and proud of everything that she's done. Like I just, yeah, I feel so much more gentler in her. I feel more embodied, I guess. And yeah, I think I really don't believe that I failed now. And I think that I did the best with the information that I had at the time. And I think now with this birth experience just feels like both birth experiences sit with me so differently, and that's still changing over time. But this birth experience, my VBAC, it's changed like who I am as a woman and a mother and how I give to my children and to the world around me. I think in some ways I've always been such a people pleaser. And as you mentioned, like, yeah, had a lot of self-doubt definitely that I think was conflated from that last birth. And I think that that's like just spelling more and more over time. And that's like constantly changing. And I also want to say that I don't think that this feeling came from the actual birthing of my baby out of my vagina, but the fact that, you know, I broke down these attitudes around my last birth and realized my body didn't fail, and it was how empowered I felt from the support and everything that I had, rather than how the actual, how my baby was actually born, if that makes sense. It was more the journey throughout my pregnancy and like where I got to mentally. And I'm just so proud of myself. And yeah, I think this experience is just going to sit with me forever and ever and ever.
No, I agree. The journey to, I feel like part of that journey is just Do you ever have a feeling and you're trying to put it into words? Like the feeling mm-hmm. it needs to be translated into words.
Yeah.
Let's see. So I feel like, yes, the journey for sure. But what if you would have had to do a home birth transfer, going to the hospital, end up in a C-section, right? Like mm-hmm. I still think that there is a world where you still could have had the same amount of growth and self-realization and self-love and acceptance mm-hmm. if that would have happened because of the steps that you've taken to prepare your mind and your body yes. ahead of time along that journey. Would it have been easy? No. Does it definitely help when you get to get your V back? Yes, that yes. absolutely makes it yeah. a little bit easier for sure. But I do believe that the same self-acceptance and love can be achieved no matter what the birth outcome is, as long mm-hmm. as we start that journey, we're on that journey, and that we can learn how to give ourselves grace and forgive ourselves sometimes too for the things that we didn't know or the things that we didn't do or yeah. might have been able to change even. So yeah, I absolutely love that.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much for being here with me and sharing your story today. My kids are going to walk through the door out of school any minute. So I want to hop off before they get here.
Yes,
so you don't have to hear all that chaos that ensues as the children keep being greeted as they come home from school. But yeah. Thanks so much for sharing your story with me. Yeah. It was incredible to talk to you today.
Yeah. Thank you so much. It's been so wonderful.
Would you like to be a guest on the podcast? Head over to thevbacklink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbacklink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.